Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. How is it April already? I have had that chat with too many people to count. Frankly, I don't even know where February went. The year is just zipping by, and with it, a lot of the goals that we set for ourselves are flying along with time and perhaps unfulfilled. Mary Louise Kelly recognized how cyclical unmet intentions can be in her quite busy life as the host of NPR's All Things Considered, but more importantly, as a mom of two young boys who are quickly growing into adults. Mary Louise decided to slow down and reflect on the tough decisions she's had to make over the years, balancing quality time at home and professionally. I spoke with Mary Louise, who opened up about her new book, It Goes So Fast, The Year of No Do-Overs. Well, Mary Louise Kelly, thank you so much for taking the time. This is really, really, really a treat.
Oh, Vicky, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
So I get the first part of your title, It Goes So Fast. I think a lot of us can relate to that. But where did yeah. the year of no do-overs come from?
So the backstory there is I decided to write last year in real time. And the reason is it was the last year that the four people who live in my house were all going to be living together, guaranteed to live together under the same roof. My oldest son was heading into senior year of high school. And suddenly all the choices I'd made over the years, trying to, you know, do the juggle and be good at being a mom and attempt to be good at my job as a journalist as well, all of those choices just came into such sharp relief. And the specific example in my house was both my sons just love soccer. They always have. They have played it since the day they could walk. And my son's major focus going into senior year, as it had been for the years before, was his varsity soccer team. He's a starting forward. And his games are weekdays at 4 p.m, which happens to be the time, like, the
what
worst
happens
possible
then?
Hour of the day for me, because that is the time that I go on air with All Things Considered every day. So it is impossible to anchor All Things Considered from the bleachers of a high school soccer game. And for years, I had missed them, like all of them. And I'd always told myself, next year, I'm going to figure this out. Next season, next game, somehow I'm going to get this right the next time. And suddenly you're staring down your kid's senior year, and there aren't zillions of games yet to come. There's like a number you can count on your own two hands. And I thought, okay, I'm out of next year. I don't have any more do-overs. This is the year of no do-overs. And that became the genesis of the book. Mm.
Given that you have written two previous novels, The Bullet in 2014, followed by Anonymous Sources in 2015, clearly interviewing, reporting is totally your wheelhouse, writing fiction as well. But you're talking about opening up your life in a vulnerable way. That's an entirely different other skill set. Was it difficult to share a personal side in a memoir, or was it a little easier given that you were also behind the steering wheel?
So one challenge is just trying to figure out, this is my life. It is so personal. What is going to resonate to somebody else? You know, not everyone reading this is going to be a parent. Certainly not everyone reading this is going to be somebody with a high school senior staring down the same kind of year of no do-overs that I was. But I felt we've all probably had these moments that are inflection points in our lives where you're trying to wrestle with staying true to one thing that's really important to you, and it's in direct conflict with another thing that's really important to you, and trying to navigate that, I think, is something that resonates for all kinds of people in different ways. So all I can do is tell my story, knowing that other people's will be different, but that we're all kind of in that same boat together. I think the other thing on my mind always is, in my day job at NPR, I'm interviewing people who are in the news or who are making the news, and I'm often coming to them and asking them quite personal questions on what may be the worst day of their life, you know, the day that a hurricane came through and blew their house down, or in the case of covering Ukraine, the day that Russian tanks and troops rolled into their country. And I'm asking them questions, you know, in what I hope is a respectful way, but it is my job to help bear witness to those events and to let our audience glimpse what is happening and why it matters and what the stakes are. And as I do that, and I'm just so amazed by what people will share with us, not because they want me to know, but because they want everyone who listens to NPR to know what's happening and why it matters. I thought, why should I be immune from that? Like, why not turn some of these questions on myself and really reckon with what was on my mind in that particular year? And so that was my starting point.
Yeah. There's one particular part in your book that really resonated with me as a journalist, and that is letting the silence play out, the art of of sitting with something very uncomfortable when you're interviewing, especially in radio. It can be so difficult. Yeah. When did you become so comfortable, or just comfortable, sitting with silence? Because sometimes, as you say, it could be the best part of an interview, the most revealing part and poignant part.
I don't think I ever have gotten comfortable with it. It is excruciating, as I'm sure you know, every single time when you're interviewing someone and you ask them a question and, like, right there, that silence.
It feels like hours.
It feels like an eternity. 5 seconds can feel like an eternity. And sometimes it's because somebody's thinking, huh, let me think how I want to answer that. Or sometimes it's because you've asked them something they really don't want to answer. And the temptation, just as a human in conversation, is let me rush in and ask a follow-up question. But if you let that silence play out and hang, it often will prompt what becomes the most interesting, most illuminating moment of that interview. And there is no way you can't lean into your radio and just be riveted listening, like, where is this going to go? So it takes some discipline to do that, but it's something that I often, you know, when younger colleagues who are coming up in our business ask me for advice, I'll tell them, let the silence hang, you know, just let it hang for a second, and or two or five or 10. Some of the most memorable interviews I have done on NPR is when I ask a question and there's that long pause, and then you really want to know what's coming next. It takes some getting used to be comfortable at doing that. And as I say, I still wrestle with it every time it happens. But I'm always grateful when I manage to keep my mouth shut and let somebody take a second before they answer.
Does the value of letting that silence play out include family life as well?
So this is another thing I continue to struggle with. But my aspiration, you know, as a mom, is to do more of that with my kids. I know, probably like moms worldwide, I rush in and try to solve their problems, or I'm always nagging and prompting of, you know, why aren't you up? Why haven't you brushed your teeth? Why aren't you dressed? Why haven't you packed? Why haven't you unpacked? Why haven't you done your multiplication tables? Now we're at the, you know, have you worked on your college essays yet? Just always the, like, let's get it done, let's get it done, let's get it done. And as my children have grown into young men, which they are now, I have two boys and they're teenagers, just sitting and listening to them and not trying to rush in and solve the problem, not trying to, you know, help them make their choices, but just listening to them as they grow into these amazing people in their own right, is such a pleasure. And that is as hard as it is in my day job, just to sit and listen and not interrupt and not boss them around, but just to listen. But it's rewarding in the same way that I have found it to be in my work life.
Yeah, you really open up when it comes to parenting as a mother, as well as, you know, your husband and just your family life. But you open up also as an individual. And what I think a lot of people will find surprising is that you've had hearing loss for more than a decade. How has that shaped how you evolved as a journalist, not to mention even in your own personal life?
Yeah, you're right. A little over a decade ago, realized it. Just felt like everyone mumbled all the time. When I published my first book and did a book tour with it, I was up in front of crowds fielding questions from people, and I couldn't hear a lot of them. And I realized my day job is actually had allowed me for a long time to kind of get by, because I'm sitting talking to you right now in a soundproofed studio. There's no outside noise that's a distraction. I'm wearing professional headphones that are cranked louder than somebody else might need them, and I can hear you. But when I'm out in the world, I hadn't realized that I was hearing less and less and less and less and less. When I went to the audiologist and did the hearing tests, I realized that when I couldn't see somebody's lips move, I was missing 70% of what they said. Like, they're able to measure it. And that's a lot of the world that is passing you by. I got hearing aids. They have been life-changing. They've allowed me to continue doing this work that I love. They've allowed me to, you know, hear my teenagers as they've grown up and have these conversations with them. They don't fix everything, and I have had to ask for certain accommodations. I do my job a little bit differently than my co-anchors at NPR, and my team, my colleagues, have been amazing about working with me to figure out, okay, didn't work that way. How about this? Can you hear now? And so far, we've always been able to make it work. We'll see. My hearing gets a little bit worse every year. I recently was in a hot yoga class, which I don't know if you've ever done one of these,
yeah.
Vicky, but yeah. I can't wear hearing aids because sweat damages them, and so I take them out, and I kind of, you know, can figure out which downward dog or sun salutation I'm supposed to be doing based on what everybody else in the class is doing, but I can't hear that much. And at the last class I went to, two women were talking and were leaving the studio together, and I was, you know, overhearing their conversation and realized I can't even tell if they're speaking English. I can't tell. I can't even recognize what language we're going with here. And that was the first time that has happened. And I put my hearing aids in, and they were chattering away in English, planning a, you know, where to go for coffee after class. But I realized this is going to keep evolving, and I guess the way that I handle it and do my job will have to keep evolving too.
Yeah, and you raise a lot of awareness as well. I was reading an interview of you talking about this, and, you know, unlike reading glasses, you know, there is a stigma when it comes to hearing loss.
Yeah, yeah. When I first got them, I was in my early 40s. And I was like, I can't need hearing aids. I'm not old. I don't want to be old. You know, there are plenty of people, my audiologist would tell you, probably pretty much everyone over the age of 40 would benefit from hearing aids. None of us hear the way we did when we were 16. We could all be a lot better about, you know, turning down our earbuds and our phones to the lowest level that you can comfortably still hear whatever it is you're trying to listen to. So I'm happy to talk about it, and I'm happy to preach the gospel on turning down the volume and getting your ears checked every couple of years. It can't hurt, and then you have a baseline. And I know, you know, I speak from direct personal experience. I did not realize how much I was missing. And then I got hearing aids, and I could hear a bird sing, and I could hear my footsteps when I walked down the hall, and I could hear my kids talking in the back seat of the car, and I realized I have been missing all this. I wish I'd done this years ago.
Yeah. All the seemingly little things that add so much richness to our lives.
Indeed.
Finally, before we let you go, I love that you wrote that it's an interesting exercise to think of your life as a play and that you are currently embarking on Act 3. The reason why you wrote this memoir was because your oldest son was, you know, embarking or moving on to what is a first chapter in adult life. How does home life feel now?
So he's off. He's in college. This is the way it's supposed to happen, is he did finish high school, and he is a freshman at the University of Chicago and loves it, is super happy. But the house is a lot quieter now. I come home, and some nights, you know, it's me and the Bernadoodle hanging out in the kitchen. And I walk past my oldest son's bedroom, and it's bizarrely neat, quiet, organized. This is not a neat, quiet, or organized child. And you feel your heart going in two directions, just so swollen with love that he's happy and out there and thriving and doing, you know, what you hope your kid will grow up and do. And also just missing him in a way that I hadn't imagined.
Mary Louise Kelly, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Vicky, thank you.
Mary Louise Kelly is the host of NPR's All Things Considered, talking to us about her new book, It Goes So Fast, the Year of No Do-Overs. It's a memoir about her life and family in the last year they all lived under one roof before her eldest son graduated and moved away to college. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, email us at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Nick Dobis and Victor Corral Martinez, with managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer is Megan Minata. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineer is Chris Feltz. Our show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. And I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.